Hi, Dan.
Hello, Jason.
Anything happened this week?
It was very quiet.
I mean, really, after Monday morning, very little happened.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, for me, I'm sure it was quieter for me than it was for you, because I know you have some stuff cooking.
Sure.
For me, it was like, all right, well, you know, I'll write a little bit about this event that happened, but I'm not buying a MacBook Pro.
Right.
And beyond that, most of the ancillary announcements that came out this week were, I don't know, they weren't as, you know, not as meaty. So, we're not going to probably spend thousands of words on different HomePod mini colors.
No, and they're back ordered. But although there was a story I saw that basically said that a lot of Apple things are back ordered. You're seeing the supply chain issues.
The supply chain thing has come out in force. I feel like even just going to places in town, going to Target or going to the grocery store, I've also noticed like more things missing than I feel like is usual. So I'm sure there's lots of trickle-down effects from this all over the place.
Next Thursday is Apple's results, so I'm looking forward to how Tim and Luca characterize their supply-demand imbalance and how they're not going to be able to sell enough to meet demand, make enough to fulfill the demand.
Yeah,
and they'll talk about it, I'm sure.
And we'll see. It'll be interesting. You know, we've seen a lot of anecdotal reports from people ordering MacBook Pros, and like the ship times have stretched into, you know, late next month or December, even in some cases, probably like based on what configurations people are getting, right? And I think that'll be interesting because Apple tends to be, I think, notoriously they'll give ship times and they'll beat those ship times a lot of the time. They like to, you know, under promise and over deliver. We've talked about that before, as opposed to the opposite. So I've definitely ordered things when they tell me it's not going to be there for weeks and weeks, and then it shows up much earlier than they told me it would. So it will be interesting to see if this is like a case where that happens with the MacBook Pros, or whether this really is like actual, you know, ship times. It's the Scotty move, right? You tell them it takes 4 hours to fix, and you fix it in an hour.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's some thought that they've been making these things for a while now.
Right.
And that
they were supposed to be out months ago.
Yeah, in June is the rumor. I wonder if you could get Big Sur installed on them, or if they made some tweaks to make that impossible. Because, you know, it's possible that they were intended to ship with Big Sur and not Monterey.
Right.
I don't know. I'm sure Apple won't say. Maybe somebody out there will figure that out. I'm not sure if it matters that much. Big Sur and Monterey aren't that different, honestly.
Yep.
They're not that different. As somebody who, among my things that I have, bubbling, is macOS review.
Right.
Which I got to write a lot more about that. But there is so much there. And yet, using it day to day, what I find about it is that it isn't. I forget that I'm using Monterey because it really is just a continuation of Big Sur. There have been bumps along the way, but they were bumps that happened in Big Sur or in Catalina, not in Monterey. Monterey is, I would say, pretty gentle.
It's like the, you know, leopard, snow leopard, lion, mountain lion.
Yeah.
They should have just called it like Bigger Sur or something.
It feels like a continuation. I mean, they could have called it, you know, 11 point whatever is next after wherever Big Sur is now. I actually don't know. But like, it really feels just like it's a continuation of Big Sur more than anything else. I mean, there's the big milestone features like focus and shortcuts. But a lot of it is just... You know, and I think that's good from an upgrading standpoint, right? It's like it's not a big deal, so you don't have to, I guess. But also, if you do, it's not a big deal. So
right, like I held off for a while for Big Sur on my iMac, which is my day-to-day, you know, work machine. But I think, you know, once the final of Monterey is out, I will probably take the plunge. And I've been running the betas on my laptop, my MacBook Air, for months now. So
yeah,
it's. I don't notice a lot of huge problems like we talked about before. Shortcuts kind of a mess, and there's, you know, other stuff here and there, and Safari seems to change every week. But you know, it's not like I find stuff totally broken all the time. So I think I agree. It's a pretty smooth transition.
I the so anyway, Big Apple event this week. Those MacBook Pros, we may not be getting them because I'm very happy with my MacBook Air, and mm-hmm. I am not a heavy laptop user. Even getting the MacBook Air was a bit of a stretch, although I'm glad that I got it. But I appreciate that the MacBook Pro is so important to so many people in our community, and it is a place where Apple is showing us sort of what Apple Silicon can do at a high level, yeah, and I really appreciate that about it. I want this chip. I mean, for me, I think the MacBook Pros are very interesting, especially in that I wrote about this on Monday night, like in the repudiation of 5 years ago, or if you want to look at it a different way, in the throwback to 6 years ago, right, where it looks just so much like they threw out all of the changes that they decided to make. And I'm fascinated by the idea that within Apple, you know, I have some theories about how, I mean, the short version of the theory is that Apple got high on their own supply. They really started to think that they could push the universe forward. And the universe said, no, you can't. And the simpler version of that would be, I guess, just because Apple envisions a new world where things are simplified doesn't mean that pros live in a simplified world. Pros live in a complicated world, and they need to do certain things. And the world isn't going to change just because they bought a new laptop. And I think that I like that Apple pushes forward, but they push forward in a way where their users had to bear all the brunt of their forward-thinkingness, yeah. And it was just a mistake. And I was chuckling to myself the other day thinking about it, that when we asked about the SD card especially, one of the comments that kind of kept coming up about it was, the future is wireless. Apple always liked to say, the future is wireless. All these mm-hmm. wires are going to go away and everything's going to be wireless. And it's like, I don't know, it's 2021 and I still got memory cards and I still have to connect devices via USB. And mm-hmm. I get the ideal, and I like the idealism about the future being wireless, but just because you have a vision doesn't mean that the rest of the world is going to come along. And I get that that's how maybe you try to spur change in the world, but if your users have to bear all of the burden because you're in the future and the rest of the world hasn't caught up yet, you're harming your users. And so, like, when I think about the future is wireless thing, and, you know, also I'm still using some hardware from 5 years ago, like external hardware, and I'm not going to buy new. Also, the wireless stuff is slow and the wired stuff is fast. And, like, it's just, but they were just so much believers on, we're going to change the world by throwing all this stuff away, perhaps a little bit disingenuously, you know, trying to justify their design sensibility. I don't know, but the end result is that the user suffered.
Yeah, and it's always strange to me too, right? Because everybody inside Apple pretty much uses these products as well, yeah. Right? So you have to feel like there are a lot of people inside Apple who are like, guys, this is not where, like, I need to be able to do my work, and I can't do my work with this, right? They just weren't in a position to necessarily change the policy.
Right. After the Trash Can Mac Pro thing, they did the whole, like, pro workflows group that they announced and all that, where they had actual professional people who use Apple stuff consulting with them on the inside on what they need to build. And although it took a lot longer for this laptop than it did for that Mac Pro, because they essentially threw away the old Mac Pro, and they had some continuity of laptops here that they had to maintain for a while. With this MacBook Pro that they announced Monday, this is the equivalent of that new Mac Pro, I feel like. This is the laptop that the Pro Workflows people said they wanted.
Right.
And it took a while to get here, but it does feel like, you know, when ADP says, you know, we're resolving all family business, I think is one of the Godfather references they made. And the whole idea of, like, did we get everything on the checklist? It's like, yeah, this laptop is that checklist. And I think it does probably come out of, in large part, people like the Pro Workflows group saying, you know, no, we actually need a card slot and we actually need HDMI. And just, you know, again, it's about shifting the burden. I feel like that's a really good way to look at it, is when they took HDMI away, what they were saying is, you need to carry a dongle with you and be uncertain about the lay of the land every time you walk into a conference room or a room with a projector that you haven't been in before. And, like, or you could put an HDMI port on there and reduce that anxiety. And Apple chose the former, and it's like, no, don't make your users Don't do that to your users.
It also comes from this weird place of trying to like slightly self-deluded version of everybody like is in your ecosystem, right? Like, well, yeah, they'll have an Apple TV and you'll just be able to like mirror it to that, uh-huh, right? Like, and it's like, well, no, that's not how the world works, and that's not the case, and we're not all going to run out and buy Apple TVs. And if I'm going to run out and like carry an Apple TV around with me, guess what's on that Apple TV? An HDMI port, if only we could have just cut that middleman out. So I appreciate, again, I think you're right. This is largely a good recognition of essentially our products get used in the real world and have to deal with all this stuff that's not clean, right? It's technology is still fundamentally messy, and that's fine, but your tools have to work with that technology, even if it's not as elegant as you'd like. And I think overall, this has showed a big shift, and we've seen that in some other products. There are still some puzzling, you know, aberrations. I was talking on Twitter about the fact that every keyboard Apple makes now has an inverted T layout on their arrow keys, except the Magic Keyboard that comes with the new iMacs. Mm-hmm. I heard from a birdie via a friend who said they basically understood this was an aesthetics driven decision that then made that like actual engineering decision not possible. So which, you know, is exactly the kind of thing. There's no surprise about that insofar as we have seen that decision made before in other places. What is surprising is that it now feels like that's the odd person out as far as the rest of the direction, yeah, Apple seems to be heading.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I mean, it's not as weird as the color stuff, but it's still, I don't entirely understand that. But the thing that makes me most excited, and again, MacBook Pro people, I've heard from so many MacBook Pro people who have been waiting for years. I mean, some of them still holding onto their 2015 MacBook Pros, waiting for this new model, and they're going to get in line for the supply chain, legacy nodes, whatever is going on there to get theirs as soon as they can. As somebody who is more interested in some other products that use these chips, I am more interested in the chips. And there, I think it's interesting that there are these, we have the M1 Pro and the M1 Max, but also that the M1 Max is not different in terms of its cores, its CPU cores. I think that's interesting. So basically what instead it's different in the GPU, in terms of the Max RAM, and in terms of the RAM, the memory throughput, which is, I mean, it makes sense given how much more memory there is. But I think it's the case where, depending on the kind of work you do, it really is, it's not quite the same, but they're very close to being the same chip other than the graphics and the Max RAM.
We spent some time talking about this on the Rebound this week about, like, is it too confusing, right, to configure a MacBook Pro, given that it seems like some of the specs are kind of in the weeds at times? And like, I think there are some people who've like been felt like, oh man, I don't know. Do I need 24 cores? Do I need 16 cores? Like, how many cores do I need of my GPU? What is that going to do for me? And I think it is interesting that I think the reason clearly they've done it is to stake out a bunch of price points, but they've now made those, like, it used to be, you buy a Mac and the choices or like the configuration defaults are generally like processor, RAM, storage, right? And now it's much more, well, the RAM is standard across the board, but you can pay more if you want. The storage does change, but now it's about like CPU cores, but it's not speed of the CPU, right? Like, we're no longer talking about clock speeds. Now we're talking about number of cores.
Right.
And mostly in the GPU, right? Like, there's only one eight core configuration, and that's clearly there just to slide them under that $2,000 price point,
right? Know, and to use the chips that they can't,
right?
Right, yeah, because of binning. Like, but
I
think
the 7-core GPU on the Air, right?
Exactly. Same thing. You need some place to put that. So, yes, I mean, it's not as if the Intel systems weren't complicated, because they
sure,
were.
Yeah.
They had different speeds and different cores, and the difference between i5 and i7 and i9, which themselves were also different kind of classes of processor that had different characteristics. So it was, I wrote a piece a while ago where I was thinking about how the future of Apple Silicon was going to be sort of like, this product, it has processor you use, right? Like,
yes,
no,
right,
no detail, just you take it, you use it. And what I, when I wrote that, I wasn't thinking about binning and how there's actually like a physical necessity. Like, I made this chip, it's perfectly fine except for the one core that didn't pass. So do I throw it away? And the answer is, well, no, you have to have, you disable those cores and you sell it for cheaper. Or in this case, you put it in a laptop or a computer you're selling for cheaper. But you're right. It's, we're all going to have to kind of get used to this. I'm also fascinated by the fact that these computers start at a $2,000 almost. And for your entry model, you're getting it with like core shut off and GPU shut off. So like these are, which I think is okay because these are pro systems. Like they're going to be as fast as like Mac Pros essentially.
Right.
So, you know, the M1, somebody was in a Slack that we're in was saying, well, wait a second, I heard that the M1s were great. And now people say these put the M1s to shame. So what should I believe? And the answer is, well, the M1s are great. Like the M1s are great. And for most people doing most kinds of work, you don't need anything more than the M1.
Right. It's a classic good, better, best,
so
right?
This is like this is a pro product and the name means what it means. Like you can get it and it'll be awesome. But and I guess what I'm meaning there too is that if you're somebody who just wants these because they seem awesome, but you probably aren't doing pro video workflow with all that, maybe the base model is for you because you don't need all those cores. Well, you don't really need all those cores, right?
It's funny because on the PC side, I feel like power is often driven as a function of two things. One is the same sort of professional work that we see on the Mac side, but the other is gaming. And gaming as a concern on the Mac has never really been strong. So like that was the big consumer case, right? Like if you were a gamer on the PC side, you wanted to buy a super powerful computer to get the most out of it. Even if you're a consumer who is not like making, doing video editing or 3D, compositing or whatever, like you wanted the power. Whereas on the Mac side, I feel like most folks, like you said, the consumer use cases are much lower. You're still going to get a great performance out of an M1 chip. And, you know, I do a bunch of audio editing and I've done it on the M1 and like I'm also working on like an Intel iMac too, right? Which is, you know, the M1 puts that to shame in a lot of ways, but I don't need a pro level computer. It would be nice, but it's not in my budget, right? And I think it kind of comes back to this idea we've talked about with, the phones, right? In terms of, we've come to a world where it's like essentially buy as much as you can afford, right? Like if you care about like performance or whatever, you understand that you're on a budget and you're going to get a good product no matter what. But if you are concerned about power, then just how much can you afford to spend? And you can go buy a phone or a laptop that meets that criteria. And honestly, it's going to be pretty good. Even if that budget is, I can afford to buy a MacBook Air. You don't really come out of that with a substandard product for my mind. I mean,
yeah.
Looking at this week's announcements, I found myself feeling like the only things that were on the MacBook Pro that I am sad that my M1 Air does not have are the better webcam and
MagSafe.
Yeah, which are like, those are great features. I would love to have them.
Next year's Air.
Yeah. Yes, right. I have to trade mine in.
Yeah, the MagSafe is another great example of Apple. That one I can't rationalize as much by Apple saying the future is wireless or whatever. I feel they just decided that it was too much trouble. And so they were like, look, USB-C charging is a thing now. So let's just do that. And
it's not a bad idea, but MagSafe was good.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that bugged me about it is like, I think the existence of USB-C charging so that you could use your double up on the port basically got them so excited that they just left MagSafe by the side of the road. And it's like, well, no, all the things you said about why MagSafe was a good idea were right.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're just like, we're going to. And maybe USB-C charging was something where it was too complicated, they felt, to do MagSafe plus USB-C charging. So they were going to have to choose.
Right.
But I'm so happy that it's back because it's a great feature. And I've said it in a few places now, but like I have a little thing that you push into a USB-C port that gives it a MagSafe on my MacBook Air because it's better like to have it that way. I greatly prefer not having to plug and unplug USB-C. So, so I'm looking forward to those chips because they're going to go. My Macworld piece this week was very much like, where do they go next? And it's like iMac, the high-end iMac. I wonder about the Mac Mini and the low-end iMac. Like the low-end iMac, 24-inch iMac, I don't know how they constructed it, but it would be an awful shame if they didn't offer. They used to offer high-end configurations of the 21.5-inch iMac. So it would be really nice if they could fit an M1 Pro at a high-end config in the 24-inch iMac. But and the Mac Mini, similarly, I don't know if they're redesigning the Mac Mini or what, but there's so much space in the M1 Mac Mini that if they wanted to just stick a new motherboard in there with an M1 Pro, I'm sure they could do it, and I'm sure it would be fine, and people would be happy. The question right. is more, do they want to revisit that? But the, for me, the big one is the big iMac, because that's... Yep. I would love to replace my iMac Pro with an Apple Silicon iMac Pro, essentially.
You and I are both on the train for that one.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to replacing my 30 or 27-inch. Haha, getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it either way. Also, a spec that hasn't gotten as much discussion as I think maybe it should is the SSDs are way faster in the MacBook Pro too. Like, they're twice as fast as the previous. And they're probably more than that versus my iMac Pro. And I know we talk about how fast SSDs are, but if you're doing super disk intensive stuff, and like the audio stuff that I do, you know, I'm doing stuff where I have to sit and wait while the disk reads and writes happen, or I can't multitask to fill the processor cores because there's not enough RAM and there's not enough speed on disk, and it all kind of bogs down. And so I look at the SSD speeds and I think, oh yeah, yeah, that's going
to
be good.
It's wild too, because for me, like, I tend to be a person who keeps using a computer until it's like, oh, it's gone kaput, right? And
yeah.
I have a 2017 iMac, so it'll be 5 years next year, and like, that's a healthy life for a computer. But it's like, it still functions just fine for the most part. Like, I don't have any serious issues with it, but I feel like the Apple Silicon train is just like, nope, all aboard. I'm on there. I don't need an Intel machine anymore. I just want to get on. And it was sad because my cousin, his iMac broke like a month or so ago, and it's like a 2011 or something. And I was like, oh man, if it were 6 months from now, I would just be like, I will give you this nice 2017 in my iMac that will be way better than anything that you were using already, and I will get myself a fancy new iMac. But we're not quite there. It's probably spring.
Yeah. 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 The iMac Pro's from 2017 too. So it's 4 years that I've had this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
hey, good run.
I don't think it's gonna make it through next year, is all I'm saying. I don't think it's gonna make it. I think I'm going to be on that train too.
Yeah, there's a lot of all the questions about the big iMac, right? Like, where is it situated now that we have the low-end iMac and the MacBook Pro, right? So you use those data points to try and suss out, like, well, what is this bigger iMac going to look like? Is it going to have the colors? Is it just going to be silver and space gray? Is it, how many ports? Like, where is this? Like, it is interesting to try and interpolate those two points and try to figure out what this larger iMac is going to look like.
Yeah, there are lots of ways that they could take it. I imagine it's going to look like a bigger version of the 24-inch iMac, but
I would hope so.
Beyond that, what they do, like my iMac Pro has like 4 USB-A ports on it, plus USB-C ports, right? It's all these. It's they and an SD card slot. So it's like, oh well, welcome back, SD card slot. I have one every day. Yeah, I am curious about that. And the big question is, do they brand something as, is it the iMac Pro? Is part of it the iMac Pro? Are there both? I don't know. Like, they've got lots of options. They could legitimately build that thing to have the highest end M1 Max chip in it. And I think they will, because I think thermally, if you can fit it in a MacBook Pro, you can fit it in an iMac, a big iMac.
Yeah, even the one as thin as that, sure.
Yeah, I think so. Especially I would imagine they would engineer it for that. Even if the 24 might not be engineered for the more extreme thermals, I'm sure that the 27 or 30 is. So it's fun to think about, and also fun to think about. There was a report this week about how Apple is working on the 27-inch version of basically a mini LED screen, which they initially reported was going to be a display, standalone display, and then they said, no, it's the iMac. I think it's both, but we'll see, right?
That's like, quite possible.
I think that's the one that Apple would want to sell as a standalone, but I don't think they want to do that until they can have an iMac out there. But it does make sense. Like, at some point, I can't imagine that Apple isn't going to sell a mini LED standalone display for its Mac Minis and for laptops that are docked, and for the future Mac Pro,
like
something that's not
the
XDR.
But yeah, It's just it's money on the table. I mean, I think they
that
there is a market there, and I've talked to numerous people both in our communities and just like people friends in real life, as it were, who are like, "What monitor do I buy to go with my Mac Mini or iMac?" And it's like, I don't have a good answer for you.
So this
I really
is
don't.
Another bringing it back around. This is another case of Apple, I think, misreading the future. I think Apple felt like we don't need to be in the monitor business because. Look, have you seen all the monitors that are out there? It's great. We don't need to do this. And the truth is, no, actually, the monitors that are out there aren't very good, and they don't really fit what Apple's vision is. And the one that when they partnered
LG.
LG, that monitor had all those wireless problems, and like people don't like it, the ultrafine, right? Like, so I look at that and I think Apple is the company that never lets any opportunity to sell another product to the people who are buying a product go unclaimed. They do, like everything they got a case for your iPhone. They got a
$19 polishing
cloth. You know, that's been out there like since they did the Pro Display XDR. That polishing cloth's been out there. I remember in my briefing about it, they're like, if you lose it or need a new one, you can go to the Apple store and they'll sell you one. And I'm like, okay. But anyway, they don't miss an opportunity because they know like other people are going to make cases. But if you're in the Apple store and you buy an iPhone, they get to sell you the Apple case. And then if you don't want the Apple case, fine. But they're going to make a lot of money selling people the Apple case. So I look at that monitor and I just think, what a misstep that was. And maybe they were just too busy with other stuff, but what a misstep that was to just, like, they should have had a 27-inch monitor with the same panel as in the iMac. I don't know if there was a business deal with LG where LG said, no, we want the standalone and you take the iMac. I don't know quite what happened there, but, like, it's hard to imagine them bypassing selling that accessory with a really nice profit margin to everybody who uses an Apple computer who wants an Apple display to pair with it. So I feel like it is inevitable. It's just kind of baffling that it doesn't already exist. And I imagine we're waiting for that bigger iMac to ship. That's my guess.
Yeah, it is interesting to watch the supply chain and the effects of this and just the decision-making and engineering times and all that. Like, I mean, this was my theory this week about why the Mac Mini that we had all thought might show up at this event didn't happen was... I think that they just every M1 you know Pro and M1 Max chip they can make, I think, is going into those MacBook Pros because there is so much demand for them, and they just felt like, look, the Mini's a great product, but we don't need to rev the Mini all the time. The Intel one sitting there for the moment, far fewer people are probably crying for that than are wanting that MacBook Pro. So when we get a chance and then we've got enough chips to go around, we will put one in the Mac Mini. But until then, it's fine running the M1, right? Like that takes care of a lot of the market for it. And those people who want the high-end ones, it'll come around eventually, but it's not like we update it every year anyways.
Yeah. I have two other items before we go. One of them is that tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of the launch of the iPod.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. My piece at Macworld is about that, and I've been told is being published tomorrow.
Okay.
So a little early, so.
I'll look for that. Stephen Hackett put his up today, including a link to the YouTube video that I'm in. In fact, you can see me in the thumbnail. Rick LePage is very clear, but you can see part of me and part of John Seff in that shot. And then in the foreground is like Jaws is there. I think Tim Cook is in that thumbnail. And Big Bob is in there. Mansfield.
Bob Mansfield. Yeah.
And is that Johnny Ive with more hair? Probably not. Anyway, that was a big thing. It was right after 9/11. It was right before my daughter was born. You know, she's a college student now, so, you know, whatever. It was a big deal. So it was 20 years ago. It's not news. It's just reflection. But even after 5 years, I wrote a piece. Like I said, it's the 15th anniversary of the 5th anniversary piece that I wrote for Macworld. So how many more of those can I write? But that was a moment that really transformed Apple because it allowed them to sell a product. Ultimately, when they made it for Windows PCs as well, it allowed them to sell a product and get the Apple brand into the hands of people who would never have bought a Mac. And that was transformative.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. I remember where I was on the day of that event, because I had just started my senior year of college, and I remember being in the library with my PowerBook G3 and reading, like scrolling through the Apple web pages and reading, you know, the news stories, right? Because there was no social media, there was no live stream. Like, it was just, you know, kind of, well, let's see, you know, what everybody's saying about this. And I had an original iPod that was my parents gave me for Christmas that year, which remains to this day one of the most unexpected gifts I ever received, just because I had no expectation of getting what I thought was a pretty really cool but pretty expensive device. And also clearly feeling like I didn't really remember talking it up a lot to my parents, being like, this was super cool or whatever. So, but somehow they sussed out that was like a, you know, the kind of the hit thing to get. So, and it made a big deal on my life too. So much of my early time at Macworld was dominated by the iPod because it was the product. Even though the iPhone came out like a year after I started at Macworld, but it was still, you know, the iPod was big business there for a long time. And in retrospect, looking back, its time as sort of the preeminent Apple product was actually fairly short, but it certainly had a big impact. And without it, as you know, I think my piece sort of says, I don't think they necessarily had the capital financially or reputationally to do the iPhone. So, you know, it kind of, like you said, it changed a lot. That is the moment I think you can peg to a lot of the Apple's turnaround and in becoming the company it is today.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't. That, I think that and the retail rollout, which allowed them to get that product and the Mac in front of curious people,
yeah,
was the real thing that made Apple survive. And Steven mentions it in his piece that's up now. And I have said this a lot, which is the perception of Apple was that they were a company that made this weird incompatible computer. Mm-hmm. Like, we got it, but nobody else got it. And the iPod was the first time for most people where they got an Apple product and liked it and said, oh, Apple makes good products. And like, that that was the most important thing about the iPod, is people love the iPod and it was from Apple. And then some of those people said, wow, well, I love this iPod, so Apple's pretty good. Maybe they make a computer. Maybe I should look at that computer. Oh, there's an Apple retail store in my local mall. And right like, and that really did change people's minds.
Well, it wasn't like having to go into like CompUSA or something be like, oh, here's the little tiny like Mac section thrown in at the back, and maybe there's people there who know what they're doing, and maybe there isn't.
And we always said back in the day that Apple stuff was good. If people would just look at it and see how good the hardware was and look at what the Mac looked like, they would consider it. But you needed to get in front of them to consider it, and how are you going to do that? And, you know, that retail thing could have been a complete disaster for Apple.
Sure.
At the time, everybody was like,
work out for Gateway.
Really? Everybody else was, everybody else's retail was dying. And then theirs, they came in and they succeeded. My other thing that I wanted to mention, because I don't think this, I'm going to talk about this anywhere else. I don't know. You never know. Which is, did you hear about how Apple extended their AirPods Pro recall?
I did, and I was debating whether I need to send one of mine in, because it is doing a little, it's whistling occasionally.
Yeah,
but
I, in the last month, after having read about this and had no experience with it, in the last month, I've had multiple cases where when noise cancellation is on and I move or make a noise, or then I was on an airplane, I get the crackling sound, and I thought, oh no. And I took mine in to the Apple Store here, and they ran the tests, and they said, yep, they're both bad, and they gave me a new set of AirPods. So
I replaced one last year or earlier this year. One of them definitely was crackling, and so I swapped out one of the earbuds. But I haven't. The other one, I think it's the other one now, is now doing occasionally, like, if I tap it or put my finger up at the top, it will whistle a little bit. And like, the other one doesn't do that. And I can never tell if it's like, oh, I'm getting a bad seal on this side, or maybe there's something wrong with the audio on this side. So, yeah, one of these moments I need to have that looked at. But it's a shame. I love these products a lot. Like, honestly, I never thought I would be as enamored with the AirPods Pro as I am. But I find that I cannot live without them now.
Yeah, it's I was happy that I didn't have to live without them.
Mm-hmm.
That they, in fact, when they checked, they're like, we don't have these in right now, so we'll call you when we get them in. They called like an hour later. But
the truck showed up. Yeah.
But I was able to keep them, so I could have theoretically used them, crackling and all.
Right.
Although apparently I didn't notice it, but putting the new ones in, I'm like, oh yeah, they also sound better. So there was definitely degradation going on there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, so now I have a new or / refurbed set. So great. I guess. So anyway,
last you another few years.
Yeah, so they extended that. So this is what I'm saying to people out there is if you do have issues with your AirPods Pro, they extended that thing and you really just need to make an appointment by you go to the page about the program and there's a click to make a Genius appointment if you're near an Apple store and it is labeled that way and they come out, take your earbuds away, test them, and you know, ideally, they give you a replacement right there or they have you come back in a few days. And if you aren't near an Apple store, there's a phone number link. You can go to a phone number and tell them what's going on. And I think there's send them in.
When I did it, they shipped one out to me, like a left, just a one earbud. Yeah. It was very strange. And I had to ship the other one back. And then I ran into a weird thing where they tried to charge me for it too and eventually got that fixed. But like, that was annoying. But yeah, it was. Other than that, it was fairly painless.
If you can go to a retail store, though, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, that's a better experience for sure.
All right, well, who knows what's going to happen next week? Oh, wait, Monterey is coming out, and those new MacBook Pros are shipping, so, you know.
And financials, like you said.
And the results will be next Thursday, so we'll have a lot to talk about next Friday.
Indeed, we will.
Again. All right, well, until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.